Anybody hear that? They said they sing with more enthusiasm than skill. Lots of enthusiasm. We listen to a story from the first book of the Hebrew Scriptures, and this year I am going to transfer. We're used to calling it the Old Testament. Often Old Testament implies that it is redundant, it's not needed when we have something new. That's not true. The Hebrew Scriptures, the Jewish Scriptures, are still the Scriptures of the Jewish people. So we don't want to sort of imply that it's not needed anymore. So we'll call them the Hebrew Scriptures or Jewish Scriptures this year, and call what we typically call the New Testament, we're going to call them the Christian Scriptures or Christian Bible. Part of that is along with the idea of hospitality. Nobody gets excluded. Hospitality. So this is one of the stories from the Hebrew Bible on hospitality, perhaps one of the best known. In Genesis 18, we read, "The Lord appeared to Abraham by the oaks of Mamre as he sat at the entrance of his tent in the heat of the day. He looked up and saw three men standing near him. When he saw them, he ran from the tent entrance to meet them and bowed down to the ground. He said, 'My Lord, if I find favor with you, do not pass by your servant. Let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. Let me bring a little bread that you may refresh yourselves. And after that, you may pass on, since you have come to your servant.' So they said, 'Do as you have said.' And Abraham hastened into the tent to Sarah and said, 'Make ready quickly 3 measures of choice flour, knead it and make cakes.' Abraham ran to the herd and took a calf, tender and good, and gave it to the servant, who hastened to prepare it. Then he took curds and milk and the calf that he had prepared and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree while they ate." A word from our Holy Scripture. This week, I'm just thinking as I'm reading Scripture, this week I did a recording for a program called Together We Worship, a sermon that gets purchased by other churches if they don't have a minister or whatever. And for the life of me, I cannot stop gesturing when I'm doing something. I don't know how that shows up on film, but anyway, it's the way it works. Well, it appears that even just as I'm just coming from Dwinton, that fall is on its way. The leaves are turning color, it's a little cooler in the morning as we settle into work and school and some kind of routine. And as I said earlier, I feel like this is my first Sunday back preaching, although I've been back for a few weeks. But I look forward to the new year and all that it holds this year. I feel like I have renewed energy for things and new ideas and excited about that. It feels more like New Year's to me. Than the new year usually does, and it's just really good to be here and to see everyone. So as I said earlier today, we're going to explore themes for a month at a time. And I think there's some great advantages to that. We're not going to use the lectionary, which most people don't even know what that is anyway. But we're going to explore some themes that partially you've chosen and we have chosen. And this allows us the advantage of digging deeply into a subject and perhaps exploring something that might be more applicable to our lives and how we live out our lives as individuals and as the church community. So today we launch into our inaugural theme, which I think is quite appropriate for a first theme for a series like this, which is hospitality. And in case you don't think we can spend 4 weeks on the theme of hospitality, man, I've already got more material than I need for a year, I think, on this subject. So I think there are some interesting things and interesting Sundays ahead, and I have a guest coming, and even then in this month, we're just gonna be scratching the surface of the subject, so stay tuned. That's my teaser. Hospitality, as I am discovering, could be considered the foundation of the Christian spiritual practices and an ethical and moral responsibility of all human beings on earth. Our biblical story, in fact, the very first words in Genesis, is that starts by telling us that God first created everything, the whole universe, including this earth, our home, And then God placed us here, providing for all of our needs and telling us to tend and care for the earth and all that is on it. God is the original and the ultimate host, including everyone who lives on earth, not just those who believe in God, but God is the host to all people. So our practice of hospitality flows from the nature of God, who first offers us hospitality and provides for our needs. It was and still is in the Middle East one of the imperatives for living an honorable life. In biblical times, hospitality was literally a matter of life and death. Those crossing deserts or mountains had no air conditioning, no cell phones, no vehicles, except maybe a donkey or a camel, and basically just what they had on their backs for traveling long distances. So that hospitality to strangers was imperative to keep them alive. When they came along, you would run out like Abraham did and offer food, water, shelter, even medical care if they needed it. And I myself, in fact, was a recipient of this type of hospitality when I was in the Middle East. In the summer of 2004, I was privileged to spend a month in Israel and Palestine. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to experience the Holy Land in all its subtle and complicated nuances as we explored the land as that is central to the three monotheistic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. One thing, though, that is central to each of these traditions is the concept of hospitality. On one of our last days in Israel, some of the group planned to take a short hike on the path between Jerusalem and Jericho in a river valley that's called the Wadi Kelt, which is just another name for a river valley. So we planned to head out early in the morning, about 7 o'clock, so that we would beat the heat, and it was going to be hot. And we of light skin do not handle that so well. So we set it out at about 7 o'clock and traveled by bus to a starting location at St. George's Monastery, built into the rock wall of the valley. Keith. This is the Wadi, and this is St. George's Monastery, built right into the wall of the Kelt. There we found the path at the base of the monastery that would take us to the end of the valley. It wasn't the whole hike. It was just about 2 kilometers of a hike where we could go to the end, and then we could look out on the plain where we can see the city of Jericho, which was quite fascinating. So these are just a few pictures of the hike. Good. Okay, that's good. And across the way, we can see sheep. A sheep herder with his sheep over there. Amazing. Between us and the other side was about a 4-story drop. So that if we veered off the path or slid off the path or whatever, that would be the end of us. By about 9:30 in the morning, when we had reached the end of our path and could see the Jericho Valley and the city of Jericho, it was somewhere in the neighborhood of the mid-40s, the temperature at about 9:30. And we were getting a little desperate. Most of us had either drank all of our water at that point, or it was hot, the water, already in the morning. And people were getting just a little ill, and we had to make the hike back uphill back to the monastery. All of us did make it back to the monastery. Keith, shoot forward too. But there was a hill at the base that we had to go up and go into the monastery once we got there. And a few were on the verge of very serious heat stroke. They never made it up to the monastery. They had to sit at the base in the shade of a tree. Keith, this is one of them. She couldn't make it any further. Those of us who made it up to the monastery found the most welcome sight we had ever seen. This is it. Oh, no, that wasn't it. That was a thermometer inside the monastery where it was cool rock, and it you probably can't see it too well. I should have marked it. It's very close to 36 degrees inside. What we did find was cold water and watered down Kool-Aid. Yet it was the most welcome drink I have ever had in my entire life. I have been in hotter weather. In fact, on that trip at the Dead Sea, it was hotter. But I have never been as desperate, in as desperate a need of that cold water that day. The monks at St. George's came out to serve us and tend to our needs, and then they took cold drinks down to those at the base of the monastery who couldn't get up. It was life-giving water to strangers in the midst of great need. The definition of hospitality in a nutshell is to provide what is necessary and life-giving to a stranger. And it is a spiritual practice dearly in need of recovery in our fractured, lonely, and complicated times. Too many people in need are not getting their needs met today. They live on the margins of society and are overlooked by the busyness and commercialization of our lives today. True biblical hospitality is nothing like the word has come to mean in our culture. We think of hospitality as entertaining friends or family generally. Or perhaps we associate the word with the hospitality industry, where we go to get fed, housed, and looked after if we have the means to pay for it. Henri Nouwen, in his book Reaching Out, observes that for most of us, hospitality conjures up images of tea parties, bland conversations, and a general atmosphere of coziness. But true hospitality in its original form is nothing of the sort. It is gritty and necessary, and it demands something of us. We have lost the amazingly rich and complex tradition of hospitality found in our Christian past. Hospitality has a huge moral component that we don't take into account anymore. It is perhaps, as I have said, the foundation for everything we do as Christians, because it calls us to break open our hearts to strangers and meet needs that are essential for health, wholeness, and well-being. Abraham and Sarah, who were considered the parents of the Jewish people, model for us perhaps the most well-known example of hospitality in the Hebrew Bible. When it says he's sitting in the door of his tent, to the entrance of his tent, that means it's during the heat of the day and he's not out working. And he notices while he's sitting there in that heat, three strangers standing under a tree, and he runs out, it says, to greet them and say, "Come on in. Let us offer you hospitality." He washes their feet, a sign of honor and respect, brings water, and then picks the best of his flock to feed them. It would have been highly dishonorable for him to let these men pass by without at least inviting them in for a drink and something to eat as they're passing by. People will starve or die of thirst if you don't tend to their needs in the desert. And there are a lot of people in the desert right in our own communities today. Abraham then is an exemplary host. And in return, as the rest of the story goes on, which I didn't read, Abraham is blessed by these guests, for they are messengers of God, who tell him that he and Sarah in their old age will be the parents of a baby boy who will turn out to be the father of a nation. They brought a special message from God. A messenger of God, another word for them, is an angel. The writer of Hebrews in the Christian scriptures writes, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it." I have. Hospitality not only blesses the others who are receiving it, it blesses us, as Abraham found out. For in offering what we have to strangers, we will encounter angels. Henri Nouwen, who I just spoke about, a Catholic priest who spent his final years offering hospitality at the L'Arche community in Toronto for people with severe mental and physical limitations, found out that his life was deeply enriched by those who seemingly had nothing to offer in return. Yet they changed him more profoundly than anything else he had done in his life as a writer or a professor. He wrote, "Hospitality means primarily the creation of free space where the stranger can enter and become a friend instead of an enemy. Hospitality is not to change people, but to offer them space where change can take place. It's not to bring men and women over to our side, but to offer freedom not disturbed by dividing lines." Churches, I'm afraid, no longer are places of true hospitality. "This has changed in the last 300 years," says Christine Pohl, who authored a book called Making Room. And that's the material I'm using for most of my talks these weeks. The church used to be a place where people were welcomed not only as guests or visitors, but their needs were tended to. People got to know them. Whatever the need, the community would find ways to bring people in and tend to them. They would pool their resources to care for strangers. I remember my grandparents talking about during the wars, anybody who came in would be brought home with them and fed and looked after and even housed if they needed to for a while. The church did this. This focus on hospitality in the past generated the Christian impulse, and it was mostly Christians who started hospitals, hospices, and hostels. All based on the word from hospitality: hospital, hospices, hostels. The root of the name itself comes from the word, root word for hospitality. Christians also started, I remember being in Jerusalem and them saying, the Christians started this orphanage, and they started this food bank, and they started this shelter for the poor. And these were all started based on the conviction that hospitality was the central and ethical basis of being a Christian. We still do a bit of this, but it has shifted from the church to community organizations and to the government. And we have forgotten our mandate to care for the orphans, widows, poor, and others who are on the margins of society. The church has become more insular and sanitized, preferring instead to keep our buildings safe and our lives safer. I remember when Brian came to me during the flood and said we should house people in our church, and I was the one who put the brakes on it, trying to keep the church safe. And he called me on it, and I changed my mind, and he was right. We cannot keep our buildings safe when there are people out there in need. Maybe it's time to recover the foundational practice of hospitality, especially Christians, as we strive to find ways to respond to the deep needs in our society today. A faith community that exists only to meet its own needs is not a church, it's a club. A community that does not take risks in order to meet the myriad of needs in the world is not being faithful to the gospel. We need to recover the theological underpinnings to our practices and to express them in ways that are life-giving to all. As we struggle these days to find better ways to respond to homeless people, people with disabilities, immigrants and refugees, people with mental health issues, perhaps the rich tradition of hospitality can offer us some basis for confronting these problems. And darn it is messy when we practice hospitality, because it is not easy. We wrestle with questions about diversity and inclusion, boundaries and community every day in our culture, in our nation, in our world. And yet practicing hospitality can address these questions and so many more. We search for ways to respond to youth who are detached and alienated from family, school, and church, and from other faith communities. The concept, however, of hospitality can give us some direction for doing something in these situations. And we ourselves even are feeling increasingly as if we're strangers in our own communities, our families, our churches, and our country. If we properly understood hospitality, we could work to overcome our sense of alienation and create a more welcoming, diverse, and inclusive community and country. We'll be talking about that down the road. We all long for relationships and bonds that give life and meaning. In the richness of the true nature of hospitality, we can recover a practice that gives life and meaning to us, to the church, and to the world. Christine Pohl, again, in Making Room, says, "Recovering the tradition of hospitality suggests the ironic possibility that in revitalizing an ancient practice, we may discover some radical and fresh responses to contemporary difficulties." Difficulties we're encountering more and more these days in our world. Radical hospitality is our hearts breaking open to whatever needs we encounter in the world, and in the process being open to being changed ourselves, to become more of who we were intended to be. The more I look at it, the more I've been studying it, the more I realize that hospitality, rightly understood, could possibly help us to navigate these difficult times in our history. Hospitality practiced and modeled reminds us and others of what the kingdom of God can really look like if we welcome the stranger, the people in the margins, into our homes, including our church home, and into our hearts. So stay tuned. That's just an introduction. We're going to talk more about this in the future and what radical hospitality really calls us to in a society where we seem more fractured and more people are feeling marginalized and on the edges of society and not welcomed into our communities. We have to have those conversations, folks. Because the world is going in a way we don't want to see it go if we cannot befriend the stranger. So we're going to keep talking about that. Now this is your time. Your time to reflect. Your time to